Good evening, one and all. Yes, I know. Nearly halfway through another month. I'm telling you, it's getting mad. It's mad. I mean, even I'm starting to think about sending Christmas cards out, and I'm horrendous. But the shops over here in America where I am, they've had the Christmas stuff in the shops since July. It's getting worse and worse, isn't it? Anyway, I am here. Yes, the winter draws on because it's actually got a bit chillier the last week down in the sort of 40s, 50s, which is nice, especially for the dog, because people know, you know, we've got a Japanese Akita, and anything over about 30 degrees in old money is too hot for her. She just sits out there in the snow when it snows. But she's sitting out there and enjoying herself. But I am here, and so is my guest. Well, I say guest, I could say guests, because I could have two people on the show today. I will introduce him as one and then say about the other. Anyway, on the show, I have the one and only Michael Rowland. Hi, Michael, how you doing?
Hi there. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you very much. How are you?
I am fair to middling, I think, today. It's, you know, well, obviously, we're sort of pretty much the same age. But as you get older, time, days go quicker. I sort of think, what happened to Wednesday? Or what happened to Tuesday? it's another week gone through. My wife said to me the other day, she said, she read this thing that said, age is like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. And when you think it is.
I know. And let's be honest, we're a third of the way through October already.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, what happened? I mean, I've lost last week along the way. I was sort of doing
October, I've lost September.
Exactly. It's terrible. Anyway, I said one and only, but there's actually two, because you actually write under Michael Rowland, but also you write under Daniel M. Warlock, which is an anagram of Michael Rowland. So pretty clever stuff there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I did that on purpose because I have some serious books, and then when I started writing children's books, I didn't want to associate my children's books with serious ones, and I just happened to write out Michael Rowland on a piece of paper, you know, the letters.
Yeah.
Messed about with it, and I suddenly came up with Daniel M. Warlock, which is, I thought, that's not bad. So, yeah, so I'm known mostly to children as Daniel M. Warlock, but for the older ones, the Michael Rowland.
So when did you, were you one of these people, as soon as you get older, crayon, you were jotting down little stories, or when did you first get into writing?
Well, I've been in the printing industry for 40-odd years.
Oh, okay.
So I was involved in magazines and books. And I've been reading since I started reading about 4 or 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I've lost count of the number of books. And they always say there's a book inside you.
Yep.
Well, I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know what to write about. But anyway, 9/11 in America.
Uh-huh.
I actually was made redundant the day before on the Monday.
No.
And I was watching live what was happening in New York, etc. And it just put my life in perspective.
Yeah.
And then over the next few weeks, I suddenly did a bit of research, and that some of the information that was coming out of America didn't stack up.
Yes.
Regarding, they knew the names of the hijackers, you know, and they knew where they stayed, etc., etc. So I spent, I would say about 7 years doing a bit of research, but not intending writing a book as such. But at the time, all the books that were out there were factual books. So unless you were really interested in them, you wouldn't go out your way to look for them.
Yeah.
So I wrote a novel based around facts relating around 9/11. It's called 9/11 Official Complicity. And that was published in 2010. It's done quite well. It's done better in America than it is over here.
Right.
And then... And then after that, I wrote, can you imagine, another 10 books.
Wow.
And 17 children's short stories.
Oh, just a few.
Well, the follow-up to the 9/11 book is called 9/11 Blank Canvas, and that actually came out last year. So it's nearly 11 years before that one came out. But I always finish my books on the edge of the seat where you've got to read the next book because something is weird.
Totally right. I mean, I started, you know, like you, sort of writing bits, writing poems and songs, and then I started writing short romance stories, and then eventually I said, well, I want to write something a bit longer than these things, and I tell you it was when we used to actually have a lunch hour, you know, not just 2 minutes to sit there and eat a sandwich. And I wrote it like short stories, like the old Saturday morning cinema, you know, leave them on the cliff edge, like you say, and short chapters. And people loved that because it kept wanting them to turn the page. And, you know, a number of times I got told people said, oh, I couldn't put it down. I had to wait, you know, read till the end and that. But it's great if you can do that because it makes people want to read. And in your case, weren't they sort of the same character or something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, what you did, basically, what Stephen King did with The Green Mile, he brought those out in short little books, and then he brought it out in one big book. Yeah. But, the 9/11, the first 9/11 finishes at a quirky part, and then I say it took me 11 years to write the second one. But I say, in the meantime, I wrote 7 children's books under Daniel M. Warlock.
Yep.
And the first is, the two trilogies is the Leap Year trilogy and the Jake Hollywood trilogy. And The Leap Year trilogy is basically based around my 3 grandchildren.
Ah, right.
I'll read you the synopsis to give you an idea of the listeners.
Please do, yeah.
Well, Jordan, James and Thomas Waldron are 3 brothers who explore an old abandoned hall only to find themselves trapped in time. When the clock strikes midnight on February the 28th, the boys discover they've been transported to a leap year in the past. Terrifying adventures and unusual characters await the trio as they become separated with the rooms of the creepy old hall. But they have to solve a complicated riddle. So is the riddle likely to be solved, or will the brothers face more hurdles in their quest to return to their present-day lives?
Wow.
So if they don't solve the riddle, they're stuck there for 4 more years.
Yeah, right. And of course, you've been nominated and awarded stuff with these books as well, haven't you?
Well, I've actually just won an award last week.
Yeah, great.
The top shelf indie book awards.
Yeah.
My first of the Jake Hollywood book, The Key to Survival, won the gold medal.
Great.
I've done quite well with awards. Leap Year, that was chosen as one of the best readers by Fran Briggs in America.
Uh-huh.
Official Complicity was nominated and a few awards over in America. The thing is, Barry, I get more awards and recognition in America than I do over in the UK.
It's interesting because I just arrived here when 9/11 happened.
Right.
And I came over in 2000. And mm-hmm. I was sitting in... Then I used to work for Unilever when I was in England. I came over to work for Unilever over here. And I was in the data center. And of course, in that room, we had like 3 big TV screens, you know, one with the weather, one with the news. And I forgot what the other one was, but, you know, weather and news on the 2 big screens, you know, right above the data center. So if anything happened with the weather or the news or anything, you know, we knew about it, you know, if the line suddenly went down or something like that. Anyway, we're sitting there watching the planes going into the buildings and stuff like that. And you know, the people are just going bananas, obviously. You know, and with people running in, oh, my goodness. Oh, and I remember this woman coming in. She says, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? She says, my family lives in Texas and they're going to attack the oil refineries next and stuff like that. And I thought, we were up at the time, we were near the NASTEC data center, and so they closed the whole area off, the police did, because they, you know, were worried about big attacks on that. And they said, can we have some people to volunteer to stay on? And I said, you know, I don't mind staying. I said, I've been living with the IRA for 20 years. You know, if you your number's up, all these people, you know, because it's never happened in America. Well, it has. I mean, there was people killed by Japanese air balloons and, you know, other places. Yeah, during the war, the people just didn't really realize it happened. Anyway, they left us there and went on. And, you know, I went home. I tried to give blood to help. But if you live in Europe in 1990s for more than 2 weeks, you can't give blood in America because they're still worried about mad cow disease, even though they had it here. Crazy stuff like that. And anyway, there was a bloke, in fact, a bloke I used to work with called Tony Parsons. He wrote an article in the Daily Mirror the end of that week. And a week after 9/11, this just shows how the hypocrisy in America at the time, to be quite honest to me. A week after, in New York City, where it happened and everything like that, they had a $250 a head sold out dinner for Sinn Féin, who are the political wing of the IRA, and all this business about terrorism and everything like that. Yeah. And there they have this blinking sold out dinner for what are basically terrorists. And I thought,
strange bedfellows, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. But I can understand about 9/11 being very popular in a way over here, when it is interesting to have a fictional, fact-based thing. I always say, when I have people on we have people who've been abused or illnesses and stuff like that, if they write their stuff in a novel, in a fictional novel, put themselves into characters and stuff like that, if you like, when people read that, they take it in. They put themselves in those characters' position, rather than this is what happened, or these 10 things are what you can do and stuff like that. And I think that's what's most likely definitely, helping you with your 9/11 books. The fact it is in that sort of, it's fact-based fiction, I guess.
Yeah. Well, actually, the guy is me. Yeah. I based it around me because it was easy for me to write it as me going over to New York.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually went to New York for a week to do some research.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was a presidential election, so I was stopped quite a few times. People asking me who I'm going to vote for.
Yes.
I told them I'm from the UK.
I still won't give up my English citizenship, my UK citizenship.
No.
So they
asked me what I was going to vote for. I said, well, I'm English. What are you here for? I said, well, I'm researching on a book about 9/11. Every single one said, oh, yeah, it's an inside job.
Seriously?
Every single one. Yeah. Every single one. Yeah, we know it, but they just don't shout about it. But the 9/11, both of the 9/11 books, before each chapter, I have put in facts, and I'm facts in quotes, which I've gleaned from policemen, Port Authority people, everybody. Yeah. I mean, because I was doing it, I got a lot of information through.
Good.
And I always remember I did a book signing in York. Of the first book, the Complicity one, and this guy came up to me and he said, you're a bit of a loony, aren't you? This, that, no, this, it wasn't an inside job. And I said, well, tell you what, how long are you in York? He said, oh, I'm here for a few hours. So I gave him a book. I said, well, you take that, you can have that. Sit down, have a cup of coffee, and come back and tell me what you think. Anyway, we're there for 3 or 4 hours. Anyway, I was packing up, and he came in, and he shook my hand. He said, I'm sorry, he said, but what you've written there is mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. And he bought 2 copies.
Wow.
He said, I can't believe what you... But the thing is, what I put in the book is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, so that was that. But I say, in the meantime, I wrote the 3 Leap Year books, and I wrote the 3 Jake Hollywood books, and the 17 short stories. Well, the 17 short stories I wrote to help children on the spectrum and learning difficulties.
Good.
Because I used to work for the Autistic Society.
Okay. Well, my grandson's just been put on the spectrum, so I do understand that.
Yeah. Well, I am. I'm on the spectrum. I mean, most men are on the spectrum, but, slightly. I mean,
not
I'm slightly on
oh,
it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Me too.
Yeah,
I
everybody
smell
is.
For anything,
Yeah. And then I wrote, I did a picture book called Rudolph's Little Helper, which that has actually just been chosen as one of the top 10 best sellers for autumn in America by Fran Briggs.
Nice.
She's a good, and then this is the best one now. In 1969.
Yep, I know this one, yep.
6 friends and myself decided to go to Morocco in a clapped out van. We got fed up with the English weather. So we bought this van and we set off. Now, unbeknown to me, Steve, who was one of the 7, he actually met his wife on the holiday.
Really?
And they got married and they live in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
Well, they disappeared in 1972 and we just lost contact for 40-odd years. And I happened to find him on Facebook. So I rang him up one morning, one Sunday morning, and said, Steve, it's Michael. And we were talking as though it were 43 days, never mind 43 hours. So out of the seven, six of us got together in the Lake District, the seventh one. Nice. We don't know where he is. And then actually in 2019, Steve said to me, you know, when we went to Morocco, we said, I did a diary. So I said, oh, that's interesting. So I said, so I took the diary and I turned it into Morocco or Bust August 69.
Right.
Which has just, it was the winner of the TCK Book Award.
I just saw that, first place, yeah.
Yeah, and then it came runner-up in the Top Shelf 2021. So I've done quite well with that.
Yeah.
Well, and then after that...
Go ahead. Sorry, no, go on. after you.
And then this year, after COVID had finished, five of us got together, and one of them just said, wouldn't it be nice if we could do it again in Steve's motorhome? Because Steve had a motorhome.
Yeah.
So it's just come out. It's only been out in about 2 months. It's called Five Old Gits on a Motorhome.
Do you know, I saw that and I thought, oh, perhaps he retitled it. I didn't realise that you went back and redid it.
It's a follow-up. It's a follow-up.
How good is that? Has it changed? Had it changed much? Yeah. Had it changed much?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay. I'm going to read it.
I'm not going to talk. The thing is, it was quite a weird one, was this, because I did it based around a lot of things that happened to me and my family in France and Spain. So there's a lot of truth in it. But also, Fran Briggs has just made it the top 10 best autumn sellers again this year.
Oh, how good. I can relate a little bit to it, because 72, it must have been 72, myself and three mates, we did in one of those sort of mini bus things, with the sleep bits in it. And we went from The Hague, Amsterdam, all the way down the Rhine to Bâle in Switzerland, and then came back via Luxembourg, Belgium, Germany, German, France, and blah. And it was only like 2-3 weeks, but I can remember bits of it.
Well, the thing is, when I got the diary, a lot of it came back to me, but there were certain things but there were also certain things that I could remember, what Steve could remember. Right. So what I did then, when I said I was writing the book, I said to them all, give me something, you know, if you can remember what we did, let me know, and it's all part of the book. But I also, because my brother used to live in Gibraltar, so there's part of that, and there's a load of interesting people who actually are alive, and are there. So, but I quite enjoy. I mind saying that it only took me 4 weeks to write it.
Wow!
If I have an idea, I set my mind to it, I can do it pretty quickly. And I wrote it in 4 weeks.
What about the children's books? Do those almost in one go then?
No. Well, what I did leap year, that was an idea that came out a long, long time ago. But I always tend to have the ending for a book. I struggle with the beginning to start off with, but I always, for a children's book, I want the first two pages to get them hooked.
Yeah.
I want them, because on the leap year one, I mean, I'll just read the first few lines of the leap year one. Because a kid said to me, he said, once I read this, I couldn't stop it. I said, I'm warning you, Jordan, if you don't let me come with you, I'll tell Mum and Dad, whispered James, staring at his older brother, who was hopping around on one foot in the small confines of their tent, struggling to slip on his jeans. This is my dare, not yours, and keep your voice down, will you? You'll wake Thomas up. So basically, there's a dare.
Yeah.
So the kids, I've done loads and loads of workshops all over the UK and Scotland, and I read parts of my books.
Yeah.
And I went to one, and it was just when the Key to Survival came out, and six of the kids there had my book.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was really, really, yeah. And then the Rudolph's Little Helpers, a picture book.
Yeah.
And I did one with some 6-7 year olds, and I was sat down. There must have been about 30 or 40 of them.
Uh-huh.
And basically, Rudolph's Little Helpers called Hopper because it's only got three legs.
Oh.
And yeah, and I have a reindeer, a stuffed reindeer with three legs. So I had it with me. So I handed the hopper down to this little girl at the front. And anyway, it took me ages to get the damn thing off the mall because I handed it round. And I read little, you know, the rule of thumb helper.
Yeah.
And we finished. I said, right, what are we going to read? Do you want Gruffalo? No. You got to read Rudolph the Little Helper again. I had to read it four times.
I got one a little bit like your Hopper. Well, I got one. I haven't it public. I've written it. It's there to be done sometime. Called the Eighth Dwarf. This was called, and the dwarf is called Lost, because no matter where he goes, he always gets lost. And that's why you never see him in any of the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, that's he's a always brilliant lost. Idea.
And,
but, brilliant.
And what happened was the evil, the woodcutters, whatever, they came for Snow White, and they couldn't find her, but they found Lost. So they made him take them to find Snow White, and of course he just got lost like normal. So they never found her.
Hey, that's a brilliant idea. You need to put that into a picture book.
I know. I've got the story done. It's like everything else, you know. One of these days I'll get to it. I will eventually.
I'm the same. Yeah.
Yeah, your trilogy for the leap year. That's Leap Year, Leap in the Dark. Was it Leap of Faith? Is it the last one?
Leap of Faith. Yeah. That's it. But when I'd written the first Leap Year, I knew exactly how it was going to finish.
Uh huh.
And I knew exactly what the second one was going to be because of the way it finished. But the third one, I knew exactly what was going to happen at the end. And when I finished it, I actually had a tear in my eye.
Oh, God. Terrible.
Because it was emotional as well, because what had happened to the three boys, plus other things that were happening, and it came to the ending. And it's a kind of beautiful ending. Yes. When I think about it, I mean, even some of the kids were saying it. I mean, I remember one young girl. She came to a Waterstones in Bradford, and she said, "I were in tears, Michael." She said, "She said it was brilliant." And I said, "Well, I didn't want you to cry." She said, "No, I cried happy." And then on the Jake Hollywood ones.
Yeah.
Well, Jake Hollywood ones are actually history books as well.
Oh, so it's education as well as a story. Good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Kids of the Bible is where Jake finds himself on the Titanic.
Yes.
And he finds a key.
Yeah.
Now, they say that if they had the key to the crow's nest binoculars,
yes,
there's a chance that they wouldn't have seen the iceberg.
They wouldn't have seen the iceberg. Exactly. I found that out about 3 months ago. I never knew until about 3 months ago I heard that.
Yeah, so I based it on that story. But he wakes up in the bowels of the Titanic. He finds a key.
Oh, and it's the keys to the key. Binoculars? Oh,
well,
wow.
He thinks it is.
But it's not.
I'm not telling you that. He's just going to try and get this key.
It's funny you say that. I mean, about getting emotional with the books and that. I one time, my short romance stuff, I did the local TV station. I came on and did like a Johnny Morris, came on and read one of my romance stories. And it's not easy for a start, because you're looking up at the camera and looking down at the book, trying to keep your spot. But there was a couple of times I got quite emotional. And I said, what are you getting upset about? You wrote the blessed thing. You know how it ends.
Yeah, but your thing is that you've got to be that. You've got to, it's like when I wrote the 9/11 book, that it was me. I had to feel the emotion and what the guy was going through.
Yeah.
And I did it with the leap year, especially because there were my three grandsons. Yeah. I could see my three grandsons doing what
you
exactly
got to,
there.
You got to. I got and into then, so much trouble with at one time with my romance stories. I had a lady from Toronto who followed me online and read the stories, and she messaged me one day and she said, "You did it to me again." I thought, what the heck? And she says in Toronto in Canada, and she said, she says, "I got to work today." She said, "My makeup was down my face. My eyes are all red." She says, "You've got to let us know, when it's a weepy, when it's a sad one." So when I put them into the book, what I did was I put a little box of Kleenex next to the sad ones.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, but when I did Kids of the Bible, basically, he finds a newspaper to start off with. And when he opens, he finds an envelope. And inside the envelope is a newspaper saying the Titanic sank, right?
Yeah.
So he ends up in the... But what happens then, he finds another newspaper, and it's the Roswell UFO crash.
Yeah.
And he finds himself in the desert with an alien. And then the third one...
We're not alone, that one must be. Yep.
That's right. And the third one is three shots rang out in Dallas,
JFK.
And it's the JFK assassination.
Yep.
So the research I did, I mean, I loved them doing the research, and the research for those three books were brilliant because the Titanic exhibition is at Liverpool, which is across the Mersey from where I live. So I spent hours in the Titanic Museum getting information, reading up about it. And then, I mean, I'm always into UFOs and aliens and also JFK. I mean, I'm into conspiracy theories anyway. Right. I don't think they landed on the moon, but apart from that, that's another story. But the new one, I'm actually writing a book about UFOs and aliens now.
Oh, cool. Well, it has been fascinating chatting to you, Michael, really has. But time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Right. Well, I say my name's Michael Rowland. My serious books are 9/11 Official Complicity, 9/11 Blank Canvas, Morocco or Bust, August 69, and Five Old Gits and A Motorhome. And they're all on Amazon, Amazon Worldwide. And then I have a series of children's books under Daniel M. Warlock. Warlock is spelt W-A-R-L-O-C-H. That's a Leap Year trilogy. That's Leap Year, Leap in the Dark, and Leap of Faith. And the Jake Hollywood series, which is Key to Survival, We Are Not Alone, and Three Shots Rang Out in Dallas, plus one called Christmas Presents, which was my the one I wrote straight after Leap Year. So they're all on Amazon. Please have a look at them. Every single one is down as Kindle Unlimited, so they're free. And also there's the 17 short stories, which I say I've written to aid children on the spectrum and learning difficulties to give them an idea what life is all about.
Right.
They're not weekly, but they're good. I mean, I enjoyed writing them. And when autistic children that I used to work with read them, it's a note. And they thought they were good.
That's
so
great.
If I can help them, that helps everybody.
Totally understand and totally agree with you. Well, Michael, it's been so good chatting to you. I know we've missed a couple of times. It's great that we finally got to chat and I really have enjoyed it. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
No one. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been brilliant.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. How about that, eh? My guest today, talking about not just one sort of books, but two. Michael Rowland, with his serious books, as he said, to about 9/11 and then Morocco, and then Morocco Revisited, basically. And then, of course, his children's stuff we've been talking about, Daniel A. Warlock. Terrific stuff, isn't it, eh? Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say.